Hey everybody, it's Stefan Molyneux from Free Domain. Hope you're doing well. This is round two, take two, tech issues. But anyway, so these are questions from the Wednesday last live stream. Sorry, I didn't get to them there, but I want to follow up. There's some great questions. So Eric writes, my sister has a saying, don't get involved with matters of the heart. As much as I get on her about her behavior, I've learned not to meddle with her boyfriend stuff, it breaks my heart. Yeah. Yeah, so there's a general perception in the world that the mind is the seat of reason and the body is this seething mass of contradictions and passions and hedonism and lust and pain, and it's somehow inferior or base or negative or a problem. This view is entirely pushed by hyper-political powermongers of the primarily familial, religious, and political stripe in order to have you self-surrender to their endless bullshit. So I studied philosophy for 20 years before I really began to put it into practice, because the study of philosophy and the abstractions and these beautiful, high, snow-capped, alpine, crystalline, platonic ideals are just intoxicating, and to study reason and to study argumentation and metaphysics, epistemology, ethics is just fantastic. Actually putting it into practice, though, kind of a different matter. And once I started to actually put philosophy into practice, all of my relationships fell apart. I was cast into the wilderness for a lot longer than 40 days and 40 nights until I found rational people and built an entirely new life. I tell you, man, I pretty much thought I was going to die in that there desert, but I pushed through and found a wonderful new village of truly beautiful people. So the body is not your enemy. The body is the basis of your brain. The body is like the foundation. It is like the basement walls. It is the first floor, the second floor, the roof. Your consciousness, like a little chimney on top. And the chimney can't exist without the base. And the body is far older than the conscious mind. A couple hundred thousand years versus tens of millions. It's way older. Of course, the instincts go further way back, all the way to single-celled organisms have their, quote, instincts in a way. They pursue food and avoid negatives. So, as a whole, the body is older and wiser than the mind. The mind has the conscious mind has its own specific powers and abilities, which are fantastic and beautiful, but I can't communicate my thoughts without the body, right? Without the hands, without the voice, without the eyes. I can't read the questions, right? So the body is the foundation of life. The body is the foundation of the mind. The body can exist and survive without the mind. I mean, if hooked up to machines and so on, or there's lots of mindless people around there who don't allow two thoughts in a row to trouble them for their entire existence, but the mind cannot exist without the body. The body has a second brain, a gut brain. It has finely tuned instincts that have evolved over millions and millions of years, or you could argue billions of years, and the instincts are empirical. See, the conscious mind can be anti-empirical. Right, there's no such thing as the world of Lord of the Rings or Star Wars, but the mind can create those things. The mind can be anti-empirical, which is a good thing. It's a good thing. That's how we get to the actual truth, right? I mean, the world looks flat, it's round, blah, blah, blah. So the mind is anti-empirical, or has that capacity, which is great. But we still absolutely desperately need the empiricism of the body. That we absolutely and desperately and completely need is the empiricism of the body. All propaganda is designed to give you counterintuitive empiricism. So, like in propaganda, the well-put-together girl from the seemingly nice family is secretly anorexic and a total witch with a capital B, and whereas the blue-haired, tubby, face-tattooed girl is really sweet and sensitive and thoughtful and mature and white. Like, it's just counter-signaling all the time. That's all you get from propaganda. It is designed to overwhelm your body's empirical nature to program you with the opposite of what is usually true. So the body is empirical, the mind is abstract, and both things are needed, right? So in the scientific method, which is a union of the mind and the body, in the scientific method, your abstractions matter, but they need to be empirically tested in the real world, right? I mean, I remember when I was taking my English degree, about a year and a half in, I was like, I can basically say anything. Oh, I think this book is about this. I think the theme is this. I think the blah, 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 blah. I can basically say anything. There's no grounding. There's no reality. That's why I switched. Well, I went to the National Theatre School for almost 2 years and then studying acting and playwriting. And then I went to finish my undergrad and graduate degree in history because at least there's some facts, some reality, some truth there. It's not just spinning spider webs in the clouds that are attached to nothing and don't last. So the body is empirical. If you go to sleep hungry and you have a dream of eating at a fantastic buffet, you wake up with no additional calories. The body is empirical. You can say, oh, I'm fine. I don't need any sunscreen. I'm not going to sunburn. But your body will get a sunburn. Your body is empirical. So the reason why the powers that be oppose the body is that the body doesn't recognize power. This is really, really important. Sorry, not like the other things aren't, but in particular. Everybody's had that funny feeling when you see, say, Prince Charles in this wildly ornate throne with this goofy gay crown and stuff like that. And he's talking about, oh, I'm going to get digital ID. I mean, everybody has the thought, don't you? That Emperor's New Clothes thought, this is just a goofy guy in a funny hat. Because that's what he is. He's a goofy guy, goofy jug-eared guy with weird sexual habits in a funny hat. That's all he is. He's not the king. He's just a goofy guy in a funny hat. Same thing with the Pope or whatever, right? And so the body is empirical. And what does the body see when it looks at a king? It sees a guy in a funny hat or a queen. It's a girl in a woman in a funny hat, right? And you look at the Pope, and the Pope exists, the body, right? The guy and the learning and all of that, that's real. The Popemobile exists. The Vatican is a physical place. The robes exist, the funny hat exists. But the Pope as a glowing acolyte with proximity to the divine who regularly receives divine commandments, like you throw refuse from the roof down those pipes into the dumpster when you're doing construction, that the Pope is the regular recipient of perfectly divine commandments that can never be explained or proven, and it's just, trust me, bro, that doesn't exist. The king as an ornate messenger of the gods placed there by the divine to rule over you, that's not real. That's not a thing. You see? The government doesn't exist. Buildings, people, guns, prisons, other guys in funny wigs, the judges in England, they all exist. The government doesn't. The physical church exists. God's grace, God. The body can't see God. The body can't see the threads of kingly order and perfection that drive his divine right to rule over you. Nope. The body doesn't see the collective. Sees a bunch of people, but doesn't see any particular additional thing other than those bunch of people. Doesn't gain legitimacy. 51% versus 49% does not gain moral legitimacy. So the body doesn't see power. The body sees people and things and guns and objects and buildings and books and letters and laws. I mean, words on a piece of paper exist, and people who are willing to shoot you if you don't obey them, that all exists. The law is not something that exists independent of the writings and the enforcement. So the body is the enemy of those in power because the body sees those in power as just more bodies. Just other bodies. There's no divine right. There's no nimbus. There's no glow. There's no aura. There's no magical extra essence of humanity that gives them the right to rule over you. They're just people. The body sees bodies. It does not see power, which is why those in power have to tell you that the body is wretched and evil and sinful and satanic and demonic and lustful and hedonistic and greedy and fetid and wretched and farty and gassy and sick and dying and aging and wrinkled and bleh, right? And in particular, the male body, right? There's this old Seinfeld episode where the female, the debate is about why is it good for a woman to walk around with no clothes on in the apartment, but it's bad for a man to do so. And the woman says, well, but the woman's body is a thing of beauty. The man's body is just functional. It's just like a Jeep. It just gets you from place to place. So the male body has to be in particular denigrated as a smarty, skidmarky, and gassy, and smelly, and right, and dad body, and tubby, and like, because the women tend to follow power more, and men tend to be more skeptical of it. So the male body is the greatest threat to the powers that be, which is why the male body has to be constantly attacked and denigrated the body as a whole. And this is true of religion, that the body, but to the girl, though the gods inherit below is all the fiends. So religion has a particular hostility to the body, and in particular to the male body. There are many religious paintings of the beauty of the female body, but few, of course, with regards to the beauty of the male body. Because the male body is the entity in the universe least likely to accept without question the existence of gods and churches and theology and divine power and the authority of priests and the infallibility of the Pope. And that's all. The body is just like a bunch of nonsense, just a bunch of people. So you're going to be attacked for the body, through the body, via the body. So when there's this argument, the heart has its reasons of which reason knows nothing. The heart, the mysterious instincts that oppose the elevated purity of your ideal beliefs and it's dragged down to the flesh. Right? No, that's instincts literally saved my life. I'm just so you know, it's really, really personal to me. So I'm very passionate about these these instincts. Because my instincts were telling me that I was living a life asleep. I was living a life of imaginary virtue rather than practical morals. And that the people around me didn't care about me, didn't ask me how I was doing, whether I was happy, what I wanted. They were going to just let me sail off and marry entirely the wrong woman, people I'd known for like 20 years. I had nothing to say about it, didn't bring me up short. And I was like, okay, well, I don't have a good troop around me. I don't have a good group around me. I have a group of indifferent, attached people who like my company but don't care about me. Hey, I'm entertaining, I'm engaging, I'm funny, I'm wise, I'm... But anyway, as far as actually me, no. No. I mean, it's a funny thing because in thinking about this question, one thing that pops into my mind is a haunting / funny memory of when I was 6. So as I mentioned before, I went to boarding school for a couple of years from 6 to 8. And I was playing soccer with my friends in the quad and somebody kicked the ball over the fence, a little wrought iron fence on a brick wall. And we could have conceivably tried to go and get a teacher or a prefect and go and get the ball back, but it would have taken forever and we were neck and neck in a very exciting game. So I just climbed over the fence, got the ball and came back. But then one of the weaselly little greasy prefects or some other student knocked on me and I got pulled up to the principal's office, the headmaster's office. It was a very solemn, long-faced fellow in his 50s, I suppose. And he gave me a lecture on rules and propriety and respect and maturity and all sorts of nonsense. All of which was a preamble to beating me on the ass with a cane. And, I mean, it didn't actually even hurt that much, but I do remember being bent over his desk and being beaten on the ass with a cane, thinking, well, this is weird. This is just some old guy who wants to beat little boys on the butt with a stick. And I remember there was this breathing, his breathing, a little bit of spittle flying by on the side of my vision in the sunlight and just the dust coming up from the beating and the tug on the desk where, and it was just like, okay, this is just some weird panting, sweaty guy who wants to beat me on the butt with a stick. It wasn't a headmaster who was enforcing the golden rules of obedience and respect and the empire. It was just like, I didn't do anything bad, I didn't do anything wrong. I just went to go and get a ball. I didn't dangle a kid out of the third story window or set fire to the infirmary. Nope, I just went to get a ball. Like, it was all nonsense, right? And it was just like, okay, so this is just some weird fetishistic sweaty guy, a weird old creepy guy who wants to beat boys on the butt with a stick. And that flushed of vague masturbatory satisfaction when it was all said and done. It's like, it was all just a bunch of nonsense and rituals, and he was just a weird old guy who wanted to hit kids on the butt. He had an ass fetish or something, a beating ass fetish or something. I mean, so the body is just like, well, this is weird. But of course, the mind is like, ah, but I disobeyed the rules, and I'm showing disrespect for the institution, and I'm putting people in danger, and ah, blah, 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 blah. It's like, ah, it's just a weird old guy who likes to hit kids on the butt because he's completely screwed up. So, yeah. Respect the instincts. They are there to help you. They are there to instruct you on what is real rather than what is imagined. Right? So your parents say, I love you. I love you. I love you so much. And maybe they do. And if they do, wonderful, great. They care about you. They ask you about things. They give you wisdom. They're close to you and so on. Fantastic. But a lot of times people just say stuff, and it's a whole lot easier to say stuff than to do stuff. Right? It's a lot easier to say, I want to lose weight than to actually diet and lose weight. It's a lot easier to say, I want muscles than it is to go to the gym, get your protein and learn about things and exercise and hurt and limp and right. It's a whole lot easier. So people can just say stuff. And saying stuff is the purview of the mind, and the real stuff is the purview of the body. And the unreality of the mind is a great thing. I had to envision being a public philosopher before I became a public philosopher. So, right, wasn't real till I made it real. So the unreality of the mind is fine. The reality of the body is essential. And so when people say, but my heart has its reasons, of which reason knows nothing, they're saying that the mind is rational and the body is irrational, when very often the mind is irrational and the body is rational by being empirical, right? So, all right. Somebody asks, for some reason, capitalism used to mean having a market to sell products to more humans, and was a good thing. Since we've become a quasi-capitalist government system, it seems the individual isn't that important. Also, convenience or laziness? I don't understand that question. Please rephrase. YouTube John from YouTube John writes, Steph, will you do a collaboration with Academy of Ideas? Thoughts on YouTube channel? I mean, I guess it's a bit picked in, but that's all right. It's typing. So, yeah, I'll tell you what I think about that. And for those of you who don't know, in my multifaceted disco ball of a career, I was also a director of marketing for some time. So I will dig deep and tell you all about the reality of this. I don't know Academy of Ideas. I think I've come across them once or twice. Would they do a collaboration with me? So for a variety of reasons, which we can get into, I'm not much of a draw, right? So I'm on other people's shows occasionally, like once every month or two, I'll do someone else's show. I was on BTC Sessions, and as I've done other people's shows, there's not a big, huge rise in their numbers, right? So it's not like they get 10 times the numbers if I'm on their show. I'm not that much of a draw. And most people, they sit around, right? They're a bunch of people who do a show, and they sit around and say, who can we collaborate with? Who can we do a show with? Blah, 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 blah. That's fine. I understand how that process works. I've done it the same thing. And what they're doing is they're saying, basically, who's going to pump our numbers? Who's going to be someone who's going to get our numbers up? Not who's right, not who's moral, not who's good, not who's unjustly attacked or persecuted, not who has integrity, but who's going to pump our numbers. Right? So, I don't pump people's numbers. I don't go on people's shows and they get, well, we normally get 50,000 views, but we got 500,000 views because Steph was on our show, right? It's not because I don't have compelling and interesting things to say. I know that I do, but it's because there is, again, this is very abstract, maybe true, maybe not true. My general theory is that the world is keeping me from prominence so I can keep doing philosophy. It's an unconscious process, very sort of deeply rooted and so on. Like if your brother just joined you on the front in 1915 and in the war in France, and he was squatting down and he's like, I got to stretch my legs. I got to stand up over the, put his head over the trench. You drag him back down and say, no, don't get up. You're going to get shot, right? You show up in a Steven Spielberg movie in a spray of cinematic blood. So no, I don't stand up. And so I think that in an unconscious way, the world as a whole is keeping me from prominence, right? So the way that I say like 95-97% of my listeners vanished when I was deplatformed is because I would get 100,000 plus average views on YouTube. And then when I was on BitChute, I'd maybe get 3,000, right? So again, there were a couple other venues and it wasn't as bad on the podcast side, but people left. Now, if the Streisand effect had occurred, and if I had gone from 100,000 views to 2 million views because of my deplatforming, then the powers that be who wanted me gone would have escalated to the point of severe danger and or death. I mean, that's generally what happens. So I think people withdrew from viewing what I do to keep me safe. Because if the Streisand effect had occurred, things would have escalated to the point of, you know, extremely dangerous, let's just say extremely dangerous opposition. So I think that people avoid, and maybe they don't want to be associated with watching me or, you know, self-protection or other things, but there's a whole bunch of things colluding to allow me to continue to do philosophy for the next 30 years, as opposed to not. Because it used to be mostly threats, now sometimes it is a bullet to the neck, a la Charlie Kirk. Rest in peace. So what people are doing is they're saying, okay, Steph's kind of controversial. And they're not evaluating, well, is he right? Is he true? Is he accurate? Does he have integrity? Is he have virtue? Does he have moral courage? And so on. What they do is they say, will he pump our numbers? And they do a cost-benefit analysis, right? So for instance, and this is no hate on Tim Pool, seems like a fine enough guy, a good skateboarder, obviously very talented, and congratulations on being a new father. So I've been around the space for 21 years, a lot longer than Tim Pool. He certainly knows about me. He's interviewed many people that I've interviewed, but I've never received an invitation from Tim Pool. This is not any kind of like, and it's terrible. I get it, right? So whereas Tim Pool will have a very morally questioned person like Kanye West on. Now, why will he have Kanye West on? Because Kanye West will drive his numbers and I will not. And so it doesn't matter whether I'm a better person or a worse person or more right or more moral or less moral than, say, Kanye West. It is Kanye West will drive numbers and I won't drive numbers. And so I'm not invited and Kanye West is. Tucker Carlson will have some pretty... Well, I mean, who do you have on? Nick Fuentes and so on. And he will have Milo Yiannopoulos on. And I like Milo in a lot of ways. I mean, the Asterion of the anti-left movement has his own particular charms. I did, of course, have criticisms, as did other people, of course, in the past when he was praising the molestation of children and so on. But Tucker Carlson will have him on and have a very friendly interview. Tucker Carlson will not have me on, because I won't drive his numbers. You see what I mean? Like, it's not about whether the person is good or bad, moral or immoral, right or wrong, has integrity, and is consistently been accurate. That has nothing to do with it. The fact that I've solved the problem of secular ethics, the fact that I've been right about just about everything over the past 21 years, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. What matters is, do I drive the numbers? And I don't drive the numbers. And because people aren't doing a moral calculation, they're doing a cost-benefit calculation, they won't have me on, right? That makes sense, right? Sorry, I'm a little paranoid that I have possibly lost my recording here. So let me just, there they are. Let me just double check this is still chugging. Yes! Okay, good. Always good to know. So the world as a whole is colluding to keep me below the parapet so that I don't get taken out, because the work that I'm doing here is so essential. And I'll sort of give you an analogy. So in the 19th century, there were a bunch of snake oil, quote, products that were completely untested, often which had copious amounts of morphine or or opiates, or heroin, or cocaine, or something like that. And it was like, miracle cure for blah, 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 blah. And there were these fights, right? And let's say that there was one that was actually a cure, right? But it didn't sell very well because they didn't have the advertising or people wanted the flashy stuff with the cocaine or whatever. So I'm kind of hypnotizing you with my Italian hands here. But there would be, well, this Dr. Bob's remedy for everything sold a million, and Dr. Jake's remedy for everything only sold 500,000, and they sort of battled it out in the marketplace, and one sold more and one sold less. But the one that actually did do good, that it actually helped, ended up being very, very important in the long run, while these other snake oil stuff just kind of fell away, and the numbers that they made or didn't make don't really matter to us in the present, right? So bending over for the numbers or battling for the numbers, I get it. It's a business plan, and it means that you've got to chase not the right, the good, the true, and the virtuous. You have to chase the numbers. You have to chase the popularity. You have to chase the money. You have to chase the approval. You have to chase the numbers, right? So Megyn Kelly can go from holding Russell Brand, a pretty formerly degenerate comedian, now miraculous Christian. She can be invested in a hugely negative view of Russell Brand, but she can then have him come on her show and give him a friendly interview because he will drive the numbers. It's not about truth or virtue or righteousness or integrity or whatever, right? And again, this is not a criticism. Honestly, I'm just telling you the way that it is, having been in this industry for a long time and also having experience as a marketing guy. So there's a cost-benefit analysis. So what is it called again? The Academy of Ideas. So, I mean, I'm sure they've heard of me. I was pretty much the most popular intellectual for quite some years in the past. So they've certainly heard of me. Do they say, well, Steph has been right about a lot of stuff. He solved the problem of secular ethics. He's been ahead of the curve by decades in a wide variety of things. So we should have him on, regardless of controversy, regardless of numbers, because he's right. No, nope, that's not how they make their decision any more than Tucker Carlson or Tim Pool or Stephen Crowder, or again, no dislike, right? They're chasing numbers. They've got payroll. They've got, you know, they've got a big expansionist place. I've tried to keep Free Domain as lean as possible with regards to expenditures because I can't chase numbers. I can't chase numbers and the truth. And I will toss numbers aside. I will carve the truth with a compass into barkwood under a tree at midnight in a storm rather than chase numbers. I think it's fairly clear that I am not a numbers chasing guy. I'm a truth chasing guy because that's what matters the most in philosophy. It's not popularity, not numbers, but actual truth and virtue and that which helps the future the most in the long run. So, you know, when I said multiculturalism wasn't going to work like 20 years ago, now people are saying, hey, multicultural. So people don't, right, when I say diversity decreases social trust, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't matter that I've been ahead of the curve. It doesn't matter that I'm right. It doesn't matter my level of virtue and integrity or accuracy or morality. That doesn't matter. What matters is, do I push the numbers for people? And I don't push the numbers for people. And I suppose I come with some level of risk, although I think that's mostly in the past. I don't want to be like this Japanese soldier still fighting the war 20 years after it's over. But so the Academy of Ideas, right? Yeah, Academy of Ideas, they're not going to do a collaboration with me because they're not going to choose to collaborate with me because I'm right or moral or accurate. They're going to choose to collaborate with me if the risk-reward ratio is pleasing to them, is a positive. In other words, I will drive the most numbers with the least controversy. So that's the reality. I mean, I haven't received any invitations in forever to speak at Bitcoin conferences, and I used to do great speeches at Bitcoin conferences because the people who run those Bitcoin conferences, and again, this is not any big criticism, it's just a fact, it's a reality. The people who run those Bitcoin conferences, it doesn't matter that I was talking about Bitcoin in 2011. It doesn't matter that I've been right. It doesn't matter that I've helped Bitcoin grow considerably. Certainly prior to deplatforming, I had almost a decade in on Bitcoin and promoting it and helping it grow and interviewing people. And I've given great speeches about Bitcoin. And that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that I'm right, honorable, moral, and accurate. Well, it's just a cost benefit, right? Will I bring the bodies into the seats And is there a risk associated? It's just a cost-benefit analysis. And that's how most people run their lives. It's just a cost-benefit analysis. So I don't imagine that there will be there will be any upcoming collaborations, because that's not how they're making decisions. All right. John asks, why are there zero young people in politics? Like, literally nowhere in the world are there young leaders. Well, I mean, there's a few. I mean, I guess you could say Emmanuel Macron is relatively young. He certainly was underage when he got together with his wife, it seems. Could be. But Justin Trudeau, of course, he comes from a big political family in Canada. His proto-communist father was instrumental in dismantling Canada in the 70s, or beginning that process. So the reason why, I mean, there's many reasons why, the one that I would focus on, maybe two, is that you need to be older to not have a youthful indiscretion bad footprint on social media, right? So the edgelord jokes that you made when you were 13 on Xbox Live could be recorded. The text you sent, the screenshots that other people might have made of the edgelord jokes that you've made, perhaps your browser history? I don't know, right? So people are like, and Kavanaugh was a huge thing for this, right? He was a Supreme Court nominee who was attacked by the left for essay back in the day. And he was to some degree saved only by the fact that he had this sort of OCD habit of both writing down what he was doing for necessary reasons and then keeping that calendar. So he had a calendar that seemed to pretty much disprove what Blasey Ford was, Christine Blasey Ford, I think her name was accusing him of, and so on, right? And even Matt Damon, absolute piece of human trash, went and jumped on the bandwagon to attack Kavanaugh for having these creepy calendars, man. What an absolute appalling waste of space that guy is. It's the reason why actors used to be compared to whores. It's actually kind of an insult to whores. But so people saw that. They've seen this happen a wide variety of times. They've seen it happen to me, not with those accusations, but with deplatforming. And so young people have seen that the left will make up stuff if they have to. If you are going to get into something that opposes their power, they've seen, of course, what's happened to Trump. They saw what happened to Kavanaugh. And they know the kind of stuff deep down that they've been writing or texting or saying or whatever it is online. They don't know what's been kept or preserved or what could be dug up through whatever forensic tools or, you know, whatever could be occurring. They don't know what stuff gets stored or, you know what it is. So they're like, well, what's the point? The older people don't have that sort of old history of that kind of stuff. So, yeah, so I think that's one of the main reasons. And they also, of course, recognize that everything that they've been told about the society is kind of a lie, right? That the people care about the young. No, they just care about using the young as bargaining collateral for endless loans and unfunded liabilities that are going to swallow the future of the young whole. They didn't get told the truth about Nixon. They didn't get told the truth about JFK, or McCarthy's a big one, or Martin Luther King Jr. I mean, just sort of go on and on, right? The Cold War, who won in World War II, blah, 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 what the whole reality or purpose of that conflict was, Enoch Powell, like, you name it, right? They've just been lied to about everything. And that gives them a great sense that there are people out there in the world who have control of pretty much all of the organs of communication, who are utterly dedicated to lying about everything in order to expand their power. And I don't think they in particular want to play. All right. So, YouTube, Jorge says, Steph, you stated in a recent interview that you're glad that the media isn't championing Bitcoin, but CNBC has been pounding the table for Bitcoin, cryptocurrencies, and blockchain for years. Yeah, okay. So when I say the media, I don't mean every single organ or entity in the media, right? So, I don't know anything about CNBC and their economic holdings, but I will say that if CNBC has been promoting, Bitcoin, if CNBC has been promoting Bitcoin, I assume it's because significant people in charge of CNBC have Bitcoin, so they want to promote it to raise the price, unless they want to buy the dip, in which case they might reverse and say, it's hit its peak. There's nowhere to go but down but here. It's going to half. It's going to zero. The regulations are going to kill it. China's going to ban it again. And so there'll be a dip and they'll buy the dip and then they'll say, oh, it's miraculously recovered tonight. So you know that the inverse Cramer stuff, right? Again, I don't know anything about Jim Cramer, but I would imagine that the equation goes something like this, that when Jim Cramer and his friends want to buy a stock, he says it's about to crash so people sell it so they can buy it on the cheap. When they want to sell a stock, he says it's going to the moon. And that way they can sell the stock because they'll generate buyers. So, I mean, I remember I had a friend many years ago who used to send me articles on Bitcoins. Oh, Bitcoin's going up. Bitcoin's going down. It's hit its peak. It's going to zero. And I'd be like, don't send me these articles. Nobody knows. Nobody knows. It's all just made up nonsense. And so, yeah, that's why I've never told anyone to buy or sell anything, because nobody knows. Nobody knows. You've had people, like if monkeys throwing dots at a newspaper stock chart do better than professional stock pickers. So nobody knows. It's all nonsense. So that's it. All right. Somebody says, I had a guy tailgating me aggressively for miles. I was driving at the speed limit. After a stop sign, he blew by me, shouting and raising his middle finger. How do you handle this stuff? As with so much of the rudeness within society, it seems that tailgating has been on the rise. I've grown so numb to all of it that I have grown disinterested in meeting people. Okay, that's kind of hysterical, bro. Come on. Okay, well, so first and foremost, yes, people tailgate. Now, they'll come up behind you, they'll flash the lights, they'll gesture, they'll curse and spittle will coat the inside of the windshield, whatever, right? So I just pull over. I've even pulled off the street. If it's a one lane and someone's rolled behind me, I'll just take off on a side street. I'll do a little loop. I'll come back. I don't want somebody up my ass who's going to cause a crash or have a heart attack or something like that. So I've pulled into gas stations on occasion just to let aggressive people go by and have their accident and heart attack elsewhere. So, yeah, I view tailgating and that sort of intrusiveness as complete entitled sociopathy, complete lack of empathy, hostility. These people are just kind of monstrous. Now, it could be that, you know, maybe the guy's having a heart attack and trying to get to the hospital. Maybe he's got a wife in the backseat who's about to give birth. Maybe, you know, his house is on fire or on his webcam at home. Somebody's breaking in and he's got, like, maybe there's some absolute panic reason, which you would have as well. And maybe that's going on. You know, it's possible. But there's very few people who do it that aggressively and so on, right? So just pull over, let the guy pass. I mean, what's the big deal? Well, I mean, people take driving so seriously, you know? I mean, obviously it's serious. You're in charge of a 6,000-pound, heavily fueled explosion death machine. I get all of that. But it's like the people who are like, oh, that's my exit. And they've got to weave past three lanes of heavy traffic to get to their exit. It's like, no, you don't. Just leave. Just go past. It's going to add 10 minutes to your journey, maybe 15 minutes max. Who cares? Better to arrive a little bit late than not to arrive at all. So people, oh, I got to, you know? This guy's going so slow, like the, who cares? I mean, go back to horse riding or walking places. Go back to lurchy 17th century carriages and then complain about listening to music in air-conditioned comfort in a smooth-as-glass hover machine. I mean, it's incredible. Driving is just this absolute gift and beauty and glory, and people get so tense and frustrated and angry about it. I mean, in general, I'm a very defensive driver. I mean, I'll drive like everyone's texting and hallucinating and playing video games with their feet. I just assume everyone's driving badly, and it's been pretty good. So yeah, occasionally you get assholes who are really cranked up, and you know, their lives are terrible, right? Nobody wants to be around them who's got any quality to them, and they're just awful people as a whole, and they yell at people, their kids hate them, and so, you know, their lives are punishment enough. But this idea that, sorry, I don't mean to laugh, because I mean, I get it, serious, but it's just, it's an excuse, right? You know, there are a couple of people who are really rude on the road, so I can't have a social life at all. I mean, that's bullshit. That's total cope, man. That is not a real thing. That is not, you can't let the bad people in the world run your entire life. I mean, that's just giving them way too much power. Why would you give up your entire social life because there was some D-bags on the road flipping you the bird? What's to handle? Doesn't do you any harm. It's just some jerk who's wound up, who's had a bad childhood, who hasn't dealt with anything, and is a hysterical and aggressive bully. I mean, he's not shot you. He's not rammed you with his car. He's made a finger. What does it matter? I mean, he might as well be picking his nose. What does it matter, right? So what's to handle? If somebody's being really intrusive and a dangerous driver around you, you move aside and you let, hopefully the cops will handle it. Hopefully if he crashes, he won't take anyone else out. But you just, I don't know what is there to handle? You just move aside, take your safe space, let him go off, have his accident elsewhere, and recognize that his life is his own punishment and you don't need to lift a finger. But as to why you don't want to meet anyone, no. You got social problems, you've got maybe social anxiety or something like that, and you're putting it on some guy who flipped you off at a stop sign. That's not a real thing. It's not true. And it's giving idiots who are aggressive way too much power and control over your life. You can't choose whether he flips you off. You can choose whether you let it define humanity as a whole for you. All right. Somebody from locals, freedomain.locals.com, says, Steph, you recently described hedonism as toddlerhood plus sex and drugs. Pretty catchy. He says, as far as I'm aware, there are two distinct forms. Cyrimiac, distractive hedonism, immediate intense pleasures ignoring long-term consequences, and Epicurean, nourishing hedonism, calm, restorative pleasures like nature, sun, solitude, and creative pursuits that build lasting well-being. If you agree with the distinction, what's the best way to guide women towards nourishing hedonism? Okay, then that's no... Which hedonism, right? And why would it be women in particular? Men have a higher sex drive as a whole. So, I don't like words that include the thing and its opposite, right? I mean, saying that I'm going to use the same word, hedonism, to include a rabid addiction to hard drugs that costs you your teeth, your youth, your job, your family, your house, your savings, and has you lying in a gutter, toothless, and 98 pounds, that's based on pleasure, you see, pleasure seeking, and also a calm walk in the woods where you contemplate nature and enjoy sunshine. Well, that's in the same category. It's like, it's really not. It's really not. It's like saying some lunatic who takes a hammer and knocks out his own teeth that are perfectly healthy is the same as a dentist who has to remove a tooth because it's gotten rotten and can't be recovered. Well, both involve the loss of teeth, though they're both in the same category. It's like, no, they're really not. One is destructive and one is helpful, right? It's helping you. So if you say, well, I'm going to use the word hedonism for that which destroys your life and that which makes you better and healthy, then you're just, it's the wrong category. It is using the wrong word for the wrong thing. You can't use the word to mean the thing and its opposite. So, I mean, that's like saying that the free market, capitalism means both the voluntary trade between consenting adults, and it also means joining up with the government to use force to prevent competition or exploit your workers, right? Voluntary and violent. Well, you see, both lovemaking and SA involve sex and vagina, and therefore they're under the same category. It's like, no, they're really kind of opposites. And so I don't view hedonism as an appropriate word for the pleasure seeking that is healthy and good for you, right? Healthy food, exercise, sunlight, walks around, good social contacts. These are all pleasure-based, but it's very different from sex addiction, gambling addiction, you know, that gets you beaten up by the mafia or something. These are not in the same categories, right? That which is healthy cannot be conjoined under the same category of that which is infinitely destructive, not just to yourself, but of course, as addicts that tend to be emotional terrorists, is incredibly destructive to everyone around you. So I would reject that completely and not use the same word for both as far as guiding women towards it. The solution to everything is less violence. The solution to everything is fewer violations of the non-aggression principle, and that will lead people to rational pleasures rather than destructive addictions. freedomain.com/donate. If you'd like to help out the show, since I'm not chasing numbers, I'd really appreciate some support. freedomain.com/donate. Lots of love. Thanks for these great questions. Always keep them coming. Lots of love from up here, my friends. I'll talk to you soon. Bye.